Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker and Matt here to bring you guys some great health and fitness information. Matt, how are you doing today?
Good. Did we do Cheeks picks last week?
We did.
What was it?
Right, and we both picked the Chiefs, and then the Chiefs did win.
1917?
Yes.
And I picked 1716?
I think so.
1714, something like that?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be close, and sure enough, it was.
They doinked it in.
They doinked it in. It couldn't get any closer. It's almost like the hand of God guided that in into the the goalposts.
It does seem that way. They keep getting but seems like lucky, you know, the fumble recovery a couple weeks ago, the doink this week.
Yes.
You just wonder, are they just the chosen ones this year? I don't know.
You know, they say that the NFL, I hear these rumors, but the NFL is all scripted, right? That'd be pretty hard to script.
That would be very hard to script.
Yeah. So what I want you to do is I want you to hit the inside of the goalpost and then just flick it in. So imagine if you were to try to do that in real life, it would take you probably 500 tries to do it just like that.
I mean, they did just pick that kicker up like a week before.
Yeah.
They must have been getting him. NFL was probably like training him, getting him ready for that kick.
I'll tell you what, guy's mastered an art.
So this week, they're traveling to Cleveland, Ohio to take on the Browns.
Browns are pretty good, aren't they?
Oh, no.
No, they're bad? Okay.
They're one of the lowest in the league.
I hope my son doesn't listen to this. He's really disappointed in my NFL knowledge as of recent. He was about probably a month or two ago. He goes, Dad, I bet you can't even name me five quarterbacks in the NFL. I was like, Allen, Mahomes. I know the big ones.
Who's the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns?
A good guy. He's good, from what I understand, but I don't remember.
Jameis Winston.
Oh, I would have never got that. I thought it was someone else. So
what are you going to take for the Browns game this week?
Well, I don't care how bad the Browns are. Is it at the Browns?
It is at the Browns.
Okay, so I'd say we win 21-17.
Okay, I'm going to take the Chiefs. So here's the thing about the Browns. They have Jameis Winston. He likes to sling it around. He throws lots of picks, but he also makes some big plays too. So
right.
They've got a chance. You know, the Browns have a chance in this one. But I think he makes a couple big plays, but he also makes a couple bonehead plays. I think that makes it a little bit more of a high-scoring game. I'm going to take 29-23 Chiefs.
Okay. Six-point win?
Maybe like a pick six or something like that, fumble recovery, touchdown.
So my son is, how do I want to say this? I guess you could call him a somewhat addicted, cautious gambler.
Okay.
Okay. So I do have, as a father, I have concerns about that, but he seems to always bet like $5, $10, $20, something here and there. And he... been, you know, kind of hinting to Dad, you need to try it. You know, it's like, so last night he sets me up with a FanDuel account. Okay. And so if you win $5, you get $150 of free money to bet with. I was like, fine, you know. So he, you know, and he understands all the numbers. I don't really understand it because I've never been a gambler. And so he's like, okay, here's the perfect game, right? So it was Weber State versus Utah State. And he goes, this is the perfect game because you can put 60 down on Utah and put 60 down on Weber. And Weber is a minus 118 and Utah is a minus 175. So I had no idea what that meant. I said, what does that mean? He says, well, if you put $10 down at 118, you win around $9. Okay. And if you put down on Utah at 175, actually, I think, yeah, well, Utah at 175, you're going to win like, you know, $8 if you put down, or $8 on top of, right? Anyway, so for $10. So you multiply that by six. So in one, either whoever wins, because there's no points involved, it's just on the line. Whoever wins, I only win 34 on one side or 55 on the other. Okay, so it doesn't matter who wins. And I said, well, you know, but I put down 120. He goes, yeah, but it's free money. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So yeah. Took the money that the account gave you for free, bet it on like a kind of a 50-50 game. And
right.
And either
easy
way.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. And then you cash out and then you just don't ever.
Well, I won 35. So I had put 10 in there. So I had like $45 then. Right.
Yeah.
And so then he took another. He took, I think I had 30 left out of my 150 and put it towards a couple other things for today. I think Army Navy game.
Okay.
Because Dad, this is a guarantee of winner. It's a little more risk. I'm like, okay.
Guaranteed winner. Famous last words.
Yeah, I know.
Gambling.
So he never tells me about the times he loses. So, but he's won about, I think he said he won about $900 in the last month.
Net, then, or he's won 900 and then he's also lost a lot.
Net that he won on top of the money he'd put in.
Okay. Kay. So he's 900 to the good.
900 to the good.
Well, he's now, doing pretty good.
Yeah, but that's just the last month. He's been doing this for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
He just kind of do these $5, $10, $20 bets. So he just does that, you know. And about a week ago, that 900 was a $450 win that he put down, I think, $30 or $40, and he won $450.
Wow.
On a bet. I'm like, you know, and I keep telling him, I said, so I want you to be careful because if I see that you start putting down 100, 200, 300, 400, he's like, I don't want you doing that, you know. And so he's usually keeping around $5 or $10 bets. But anyway, I did that last night for the first. I've never bet gambling in my life, so I'm sitting there watching him do it. I'm like, okay, I don't know what this all means, but okay, I'll go with whatever you tell me to do.
A new gambler.
I know.
So Matt, you're now going to be our gambling expert picking the Chiefs games to
not
tell us all the spreads and the points. And
I should bring my son on and have him talk about, you know, how to gamble. That's kind of scary and sad at the same time.
Very fitting for the Loading the Bar podcast. Mm-hmm. Gambling.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, interesting. Okay, so we are going to move into our fit focus of the day. This was an article found by Matt. Great article. It says, doctors warn cooking oil used by millions may be fueling explosion of colon cancers in young people. Matt, do you want to walk us through a little bit of what this article says?
Well, it says many of the things that we've been talking about for a long time. And what I found significant about the fact, and the article's good, but what I found even more significant, this was covered by the Daily Mail, right? So now, because of, you know, RFK, we're starting to get these kind of stories, right?
Mainstream. It's no longer fringe to have these
opinions. Yes. Mainstream. And that's why I thought it was significant and why I thought, well, let's bring it up. Because, you know, now they're actually connecting the dots. I mean, this one is explosion of a colon cancer in young people, and they actually, these charts have been around for years, right? That's always been the fringe or the conspiracy people that, you know, are worried about these seed oils, and you know, it's just been, and you know, there's been some legitimate traction in the last few years before RFK, and now since RFK has come out, now you're seeing some mainstream people starting to cover it. And it is interesting why that is. Why not take that leap of faith before RFK? you know, or do they feel safer that they'll get, that they're not as, they're more sheltered now that now it's more mainstream knowledge? Were they worried? Was the Daily Mail or any other mainstream journalism, were they worried what may or may not come to publish an article like this? I don't know.
Well, you do know what the difference between a conspiracy theory and the truth is, right?
100%. They're both the same.
No, the difference is a couple of years.
Yeah. Yes, a couple of years. I think conspiracy theorists are like 10 and 0 right now.
Just takes a while to
prove
the truth.
Yeah.
Well, that is the interesting thing about this. If you read in the opening paragraph, it says this study that they are looking at was actually government funded.
Yeah.
So interesting, the government funded this study, and then they got this result that goes against the guidance that the government has been giving out for decades, and it was still published.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so, and I think, and it does mention, you know, farther down in the article, you know, RFK. And so it almost like it's connecting the dots that, oh, now we have someone at the highest level that's saying, yeah, these seed oils are terrible for you, you know? And so, okay, we can publish the article.
I don't know. So diving a little bit into what this study actually said, they analyzed 80 people that had colon cancer. And so basically what they found is in the colon tumors, they had a very high level of bioactive lipids, microscopic fatty compounds produced when the body breaks down seed oils. So what they're suggesting is they're finding the aftermath of what seed oils do to your body. They're finding that compound heavily in these tumors, these colon cancer tumors. And what they're suggesting is that the seed oils in large amounts are producing large amounts of these bioactive lipids, which form together to create these tumors. And they're suggesting that the seed oils in a high level of consumption is what is leading to colon cancer.
Yeah.
But and see, I remember reading that red meat was what causes colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So what changed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It's because, you know, it's right now the people, a lot of the people that make decisions aren't making decisions for the virtue of things, not for the good of mankind. They make decisions based on greed. So seed oils were developed because it can make you more money, right? It's cheap to produce, and there's also, well, I don't know if that's actually true, so I can't say that. But what I do know is that it caused a vicious circle, right? You have people eating seed oils, feeds the hospitals that make money off that. It's just like a vicious circle. And then they put you on prescription drugs, and we know the whole ring around the rosary here. Ring around the rosy. And then, ironically, it goes on to say, you know, they're strongly suggest or urging people to swap their seed oils for avocado and olive oil. Well, let's throw a couple in there. Tallow.
Coconut oil.
Ghee.
Ghee.
Yeah, you know. These are fantastic.
Much better options.
Much better options. I mean, because even olive oil has a smoking point. It's just much, much higher.
A little more difficult to cook with.
Yeah.
Because of its smoking point.
Yeah.
This reminded me of something. So I was also reading another article, and this would be a good one to kind of talk about and get your opinion on. And so the pork industry raises pigs for meat. The big producers were looking for a way to put more fat on the pigs more quickly.
Okay.
And so what they decided to do was they decided to start feeding them coconut oil. This was a long, long, many decades ago, before the seed oils really became common.
Okay.
And they thought that the fat content in the coconut oil would cause the pigs to gain a lot of weight, gain a lot of fat, which is what they wanted these pigs to do. They found feeding them coconut oil actually made them leaner, not fatter. And so they began a search for what can we feed these pigs to make them fatter quicker. And what that ended up coming up with was the seed oils that we have today. Canola oil, sunflower oil.
Grapeseed oil, yeah.
Corn oil, some of these different seed oils. Soybean oil, you know, some of these different seed oils. And they started testing them on the pigs, and they found that these seed oils were making the pigs really fat really quickly, which is what they wanted. And so they started feeding large doses of these seed oils to the pigs to make them fat very quickly for slaughter.
Well, again, what is the why are they wanting to get these pigs fatter sooner?
To slaughter them.
Right.
For sale.
Right. But it's kind of like, and I apologize to all my health fitness bros, but when I want to get bigger sooner, faster, stronger, quicker, I don't want to wait for the natural process, right? And I want to go beyond the natural process of what my body can do, right? So that's what they're doing to these pigs. They're feeding them something that takes them beyond their natural process. And what I'm getting at, that there's a level of selfishness and greed there.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
They're all about the numbers, you know, these big hog facilities and hog barns that produce crazy numbers. They're just all about the faster they can get them big enough to slaughter, then that's the more pigs they can run through, the more profit they get, you know.
And that's at the detriment of your body.
Exactly. But I also think, you know, humans and pigs are genetically not that different. Obviously, very different. Different animal than human, but there's a lot of genetic similarities. And the effects that the seed oils have on the pigs, we shouldn't be surprised if they have very similar effects on humans. And I think the evidence is that they do.
Yeah.
But they're going to make you put on and store a lot of body fat, in addition to what we're reading in this article, which is that they may even cause cancer.
Right.
Tumors to grow.
Right.
It's not normal for your body to ingest this amount of a seed oil. We talked about it before, but you brought up grapeseed oil a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the number, but it's a crazy amount of grape seeds that you would have to eat to get the equivalent of what you get whenever you put a little bit of grape seed oil on something.
Right.
I probably could find it, but it's something like eating thousands of pounds of grapes to get the same amount of grape seed oil you would get in a, you know, few tablespoons of grape seed oil.
Yeah, I was doing a quick search on what you just said, coconut oil in pigs. See if coconut fed to pigs. This is a Reddit article. Why coconut oil isn't fit for pigs. The effects of coconut oil in addition to feed of pigs. I don't know if I can find the correct article on this, but it'd be interesting then reading
about
that.
I could probably find it if I dug it up.
Yeah.
I want to do it right now.
Sure.
Just because.
Taking a shot in the dark, see if it would come up quickly.
Maybe it's something we can talk about next week.
Yeah.
As our fit focus. So basically, just like we always say, another reason to stay away from these seed oils.
Yeah, and as everyone knows, we've covered these ad nauseum, right? But they need to be covered that way because, you know, some people, they'll be listening to this show for the first time, and I didn't know that canola oil was bad, you know, because not everyone, you know, listens to all our shows in their entirety. So if they listen to this one show for the many times that we've talked about it, stay away from seed oils at all costs.
100%. You know, something I want to bring up before we move on. I remember being young and you'd go to the grocery store. I go to the grocery store with my parents' stuff. You know, you have all the different groceries that you buy. And one of the things that was bought was vegetable oil.
Yep.
right? So I want everyone to understand, when we say seed oils and we talk about all these specific oils, vegetable oil also falls under that category.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was little, you know, you would go in, buy the vegetable oil, and it's got the label on it, and it's got like the vegetables on there.
Right.
And it says vegetable oil, and you just assume, somehow this is just made from a bunch of vegetables, and I'm like, it's like drinking a V8 or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it is.
Right.
It's made of all these same oils that we talk about. Technically, are soybeans a vegetable? I guess, but if you do a bunch of processing to get the seeds into an oil form, or rape seeds, right? That's mm-hmm. what canola oil is. It's made from rape seeds.
Right.
So the processing that it takes to turn these rape seeds into an oil, it's not what they made it out to be. And I think we all kind of know that now. But I remember being little, you just assume, it says vegetable oil.
Right.
I don't know if I could see what the actual ingredients. I think there's different oils in there. Let me see what oils are in
that should come up pretty
vegetable
quick.
Oil. Let me see if I can. Vegetable oils are fatty oils delivered from seeds. They are often blends of oil such as corn, soybean, sunflower, or palm oils. Some also include canola oil, peanut oil, safflower oil. So it's all these oils that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And the, you know, these are the things that they have a very low smoking point, and cancer agents, you know, when you are going past those smoking points.
Yeah, we have a study right here showing you that if you eat these things, the body's going to process them. The ingredients they get after your body processes them clump together and form tumors in the colon. That's
correct.
What this study suggests.
Yeah. No,
it's not a naturally occurring thing for people to eat.
Yeah, so guys, you know, in conclusion, you come to Anytime Fitness Gym and sit down and talk to me and Parker about the cooking oils, and we'll get you off of them and start you on a healthy meal plan.
No seed oils.
No
like
seed
you said,
oil.
Beef tallow.
Beef
and
tallow.
You go down the aisle at the store, and it's, I mean, how many different jugs and containers of oil, seed oils, is there? It's a whole aisle.
Whole
right?
aisle.
But if you want to try to get beef tallow, you have to, you know, you go to a farmer's market or go to Sprouts or something. You can't even hardly find it. I don't even know if you can find beef tallow in the traditional grocery store.
No. And here's the thing. You know, sometimes I'm always disappointed when I go, and I always think about seed oils when I go to Quick Trip, right? So I go to Quick Trip, I fill up gas, and man, I could really use just a snack between now and getting home. I go in I walk down the aisles, and I'll see the energy drinks. I'm like, no, I don't want to do an energy drink. And I walk down the chips aisle, and every single one of them, you know, I know they have seed oils in them and red dye and all this stuff. And I walk down, you know, every single piece of a consumable food in a Quick Trip, I think is bad for you.
Oh, gas stations and convenience stores are the worst. Like you said, I'm not sure there's even an item in there that's not
100%
full of seed oils that's actually good for you. I mean, I was in there the other day and I was thinking about it, looking around. Like, everything in here has a multiple-year shelf life. Like, you could not even sell an item in here for a year and come back in and everything's still good. You wouldn't even have to throw anything out.
100%.
Who knows how long? Because, you know, you see all these hundreds of different items. You know they don't sell out of them very quickly. So
right.
Who knows how long they have some of those items sitting on the shelf.
Oh,
years, probably.
100%. I mean, you know, if we get in an apocalypse, go to your local QT. It'll still be there.
It's like the McDonald's burger that, you know, doesn't deteriorate after many years.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's really scary. I think I mentioned on a previous show where their lady pulls out a hamburger that's 25 years old, and it still looks as good as the day they gave it to her.
Yeah.
So, It's like
as if it's like made of plastic or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, and I'm putting this in my body. Yeah. So you know, yeah. So I think the times that you know, sometimes I'll like research the beef jerky they have in there and try to find some beef jerky that's not too loaded with anything. And that's about the only thing I can walk out of there with.
That's not bad. It's not going to have the seed oils and most of the other bad ingredients. The problem is that the processing they have to put it through and the chemicals they have to put into it to be able to preserve it.
Yes.
Meat isn't naturally shelf-stable in room temperature for years.
Right.
You know, but beef jerky is because of the processing that they do to it. So
yeah,
it's kind of it's a better option, still not a great option.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and so, like, sometimes I was like, oh, I got to get something, and I don't have time to run by any health food store, and I'm on my way home. I just need a hit, so I'll grab the cleanest beef jerky I can find, you know, that doesn't have too much caramel coloring in it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a color they put in beef jerky, is a caramel color to kind of make it look tastier than it is, or just tastier, so.
It's one of the best things about gas stations is the pay at the pump, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go inside. You just swipe your card and fill up and then...
It's the allure of the big QT. It pulls me in. Yeah, no. It was just yesterday. I walked in. I walked through all the aisles and I said, there's nothing here I can eat. So I got in my car and left.
Wow, that's some willpower. Yeah, right there.
I was just like, I can't eat anything here. It's like, oh, okay. And there's been times probably in the last few months where I'm like, okay, this bag is, it's like one of the baked kind of chips, and it has like, it might have like I'm trying to remember the oil it was cooked in. It's not a good oil, but it wasn't one of the worst, and I don't remember what it is now, but I was like, okay, just a little bit of salt, you know, and I'll get it, and I'm like, a week later, I find 2/3 of the bag in the back seat because I only ate like 1/3 of it. Just wanted some salt.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this has got to change. Give us some gas station food that is not this bad.
Ah, that's a good idea. A gas station that has healthy snacks.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got an idea here to work with.
All right.
What's marinate on that a little bit.
For all those entrepreneurs out there, let us know if you think that's a great idea.
We'll sell you the idea.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt, let's dive into our main topics of the day, which are going to be cold plunging and infrared saunas.
Which one do you want to cover first?
Let's do the cold plunges first.
Okay.
So I believe Matt found a good article discussing cold plunges, and we also have some of our opinions on them, and then I found one about infrared saunas. So what is your take on the idea behind cold plunging?
Well, I'm not going to speak with great authority on this. So I'll tell you my experience with cold plunging, and then I will... I never called it cold plunging. I just called it ice baths.
Yeah, that's what everyone called it like 20 years ago.
Yeah,
and
so
it just got rebranded.
Yeah, so when I was a competitor and we get done with a long workout, the coaches would bring us back and fill these big round metal tubs.
Stock tanks,
100%, that would come up almost to my chest. And they were tall ones. And they would go through trouble and fill that bad boy up with ice, fill it up with water, make all of us get in there for 3 times for a minute. And at the end of practice. And I remember being like, holy smokes. You know, you get in there and it's like you go in, it's like it wakes you up, right? And so we're in there for a good minute. And then... gives us like, you know, 2 or 3 minutes out, and then puts us in for another minute, and then 2 or 3 minutes out. So I felt like I had a good effect at the time.
How long ago was this?
Oh my God, no, I ain't telling you that.
Oh, I not mean that to call you old, but
it was a long time ago. But they had, you know, there was some awareness of it back then. And You know, so that it's been decades since then. And now it's start, you know, in the last 10 years, it's really, you know, now become more mainstream. Now, that used to be in, you know, in your locker room stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, do you remember the ice bucket challenge?
I do.
That went on, what was that, about 10 years ago? And everyone was supposed to, like, dump a bucket of ice on themselves.
Yes.
And it was for, was it for ALS awareness or something?
I think so.
There was a reason for
it. Yeah,
yeah. But you're supposed to take a video of yourself doing it and then send it to somebody else. That's, I feel like that's kind of when it started to become more common again.
Yeah.
After that, it got a lot of people doing it. Now, of course, that you just poured it on yourself, so it was like 2 seconds and then you're done. But I feel like ever since then, it's been starting to make a comeback of people doing these cold plunges, either getting into really cold water, getting into ice bath, taking cold showers, all things like that have become a lot more popular and the benefits of them. there was a, was it, there was somebody that did a, I want to say maybe it was a Amazon Prime series, Netflix, something like that, but it was episodes about how to increase your longevity.
Right.
It was Matt Hargrave, one of our friends, was telling me about it.
Okay.
And he was talking about, they talked about cold showers and cold plunging on there. So, and that was a couple years ago. So a lot more mainstream. You're seeing a lot more research come out about it, more famous people talking about it, people with authority talking about it. And I would say, you know, the average person's probably at least heard of what it is now.
Yeah, and, you know, now they're selling these cold plunges, you know, like kits. Like, they're like little blow-up kits that blow up into a size of a little immersion.
Like a kiddie pool almost.
Yeah, like a kiddie pool. Like, and it comes up about the size of these tables, and it's, you know, blows up to where it's inflated, and then you can fill it with ice, and you can submerge yourself in it up to your neck, you know. And so, and I've been seeing these things sell. Now, I will say that there is a mixed response to those that are using them if they actually work. And I won't, I found a an article on this, and one of the things is, how does cold water immersion improve your recovery? Well, it addresses five subjects. So vasoconstriction, which is blood vessel constriction. Vasoconstriction, excuse me. And then that's blood vessel constriction. Pain relieving, reduces inflammation pathways, placebo effect, which I found was interesting, and then hydrostatic pressure. Okay, so it covers those five things. Definitely, I know just when you like, you know, you, I mean, there's some, you know, when you've twisted your ankle, right? And they would say, do the Rice method. You know, rest, ice, elevation. I forget what the C stands for, but it's so you rest it, you ice it, and then the compression maybe, and then elevation. So that's been wildly attacked over the last several years. Is that it, the Rice method doesn't do anything for you? Okay. And that the ice numbs it, makes it feel better, but it doesn't cause any healing. So, you know, I think of this, you know, what they're talking about, immersing the whole body. And, you know, is this actually helping people?
Well, I have a little bit of experience with this.
Okay.
I mean, I've taken ice baths and stuff before, but not on a regular basis. But what I have done is try to simulate the next closest thing that I can easily do, which is a cold shower.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'll do is, I wash myself in warm water always because that's how you get clean.
Yeah.
At the end of my
shower.
Thanks
for letting me know that.
Just so you know, at the end of my shower, I would turn the water to all the way to cold.
Yeah.
And spend a few minutes in a very cold shower. And I would say the main reason that I did that was not for like muscle recovery or anything like that. I do believe there are some benefits behind recovery for cold plunging. For me, it was more of training my body to do difficult things. And a resilience for my body, exposing it to more extremes. Not getting it so used to. It's like nowadays people, you've got homes that have heat and AC. And in the wintertime, they've got the heat on. In the summertime, they've got the AC on. And when it switches seasons, it's like they don't even... They go right from heat to AC.
Yeah.
And then in the fall, they go right from AC to heat.
Yeah.
And it's like almost 365 days a year, you've got temperature controlled.
Right.
And you leave your house and you get in your car, and it's temperature controlled. You go to work, you sit in your office, it's temperature controlled. And you spend, you know, 23 and a half hours a day in a temperature controlled environment that's exactly the temperature that's comfortable.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was important to expose myself to both extremes, but to extreme temperatures to keep my body trained. It's kind of like, why do you do intense cardiovascular exercise to make your keep your heart in better shape?
Yeah.
Because intense exercise gets your heart rate up really high. And it's like working out your heart. You work it out, your heart rate goes up really high. And then now when your heart rate's at rest, it's so much easier for your heart.
Right.
If you subject your body to these extreme temperatures, it gets used to those. And then now when you are at a comfortable temperature, your body's so much more at rest than it would be normally. If the most extreme temperature you ever feel is a normal, you know, 68 degrees, that you're not in very good temperature shape. If the highest heart rate you ever experience is your resting heart rate, you're not in very good shape.
I've never heard that term before. You're not in very good temperature shape.
Temperature shape, yep. Well, think about it. You know, and a lot of people, most people, I would say, but you go outside when it's 40, and like I said, I don't like the cold either, but they're like, oh, it's so cold, and they're like rushing to like get inside.
Mm-hmm.
But they got to bundle way up to go outside.
Yeah.
And like I said, I understand. You bundle up, you want to be comfortable, but I don't know. Sometimes I'll walk outside when it's really cold in like a t-shirt and shorts just to subject myself to it. And it's not that extreme to me.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in it all day, but whatever. If I need to spend 20 minutes outside in the cold, it's not that big a deal.
Well, I used to be, and when I was in my 20s and 30s, I used to be, according to your logic, in fantastic temperature shape.
Well, and why is that?
Because I used to run outside in freezing cold weathers. I never missed a day, right? It didn't matter if it was negative 20. I have a record in my life when I went out when I was in high school with my buddy, and it was negative 26. The wind chill was negative 55, okay? Coldest, one of the coldest days in history in my hometown, okay? We went running, and as we were running, it was so cold, right? So I'm covered in multiple layers, right? And I had a mask over the top of my face, or a scarf, right? And that scarf, you know, you're breathing out of it, right? So that moisture from your breath is getting on the other side of the scarf. But it's literally, it's freezing instantaneously once it gets through the scarf, right?
Wow.
Okay. And also, my breath is going up onto my eyes, right? So two things happen. So one time I was breathing, and I had my scarf wrapped around me multiple times. And at negative 55, you touch the front of your scarf, and it breaks. It, like, literally, it cracked it. Like, the string broke because it was frozen solid. And you just, you know. And then one time and during that same run, I was breathing up, and one of my eyelids froze shut. As I was running like this, I closed it, and the steam hit it, and then the cold hit it, and I was like, I can't open my eye. So we had to stop at a buddy's house because we were like 4 miles from home, and I stopped at a buddy's house so I can like get my eye open back up, and then we went back out and running, you know. And at that day, the newspaper, one of the newspaper photographers drove by, and he saw us out running, so he took our picture. We were on the front page of the paper.
That's pretty cool.
You know, two nut jobs running in, you know, negative 55 degree weather. But, you know, it. So, but I used to, you know, run no matter the weather. It could be 110, which I'd done that before, running 10 miles in 110 degree heat, or, you know, running in ultra freezing. So the good portion of my 20s and 30s, when I was married and starting to have kids, anywhere we went, didn't matter how cold it was, I was always wearing shorts because it didn't bother me, right? Well, I can't say that anymore. Yesterday I went out in shorts, like, damn, it's cold.
It was cold yesterday.
My temperature shape isn't so good anymore.
Well, there's one way to fix that.
Cold plunges.
The winter is kind of easy. And that's one of the things that I've learned. Cold plunging is probably going to be the best way to simulate an extreme cold temperature.
Yeah.
Ice bath. But I've found that there's a lot of effort that has to go into that. Because like you said, you have to have a tub to do it in. You have to be able to fill the tub up easily. You have to be able to drain the tub. You have to have the ice available. That's a lot of ice.
A lot of ice.
And you have to have that. If you're going to do it every day, you have to have the ice available every day. You have to have like an industrial ice machine or something. It's logistically a very difficult thing to do year round.
Well, think of the ice machine we had back at Shred.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So you would probably, to fill an ice tub up, you'd probably have to use all that ice.
Probably.
You know, which would, that's an industrial ice machine, right? Well, a couple of the things, that it talks about vasoconstriction. So I wanted to read this to you. It says, and see how it opens up here. One of the theories suggests that the immersion into cold water causes vasoconstriction, leading to a lower localized blood flow. It is thought that cold temperature activates the thermal nerves, leading to a change in its sympathetic nerve activity, and is therefore responsible for the reduced blood flow. The temperature-induced reduction in blood flow around the damaged tissues causes the strenuous exercise and reduces, here's that word we were wanting to look up, oedemas and inflammatory activity. So as far as oedemas, let's look what that it means, because I don't know what that means. Build up a fluid in the body. Okay. So that's just build up a fluid in the body. So it's a theory.
That's interesting. The restriction of blood flow around the damaged tissue. I've always, I guess, subscribe to the methodology that an advanced blood flow around damaged tissue is more conducive for healing than a restricted blood flow.
100%.
And my, I guess you would say, logic, if you want to call it that, has always been that the cold, like say you do get in a cold shower, and this is from my experience with a cold shower. If I take a cold shower, is really, really, really cold while I'm in there, and the blood is not flowing good. But then when I get out of the shower, within a minute or two, I'm hot. I'm warm.
Yeah, yeah.
What the body, it's like, has an equal and opposite reaction, where you get super, super cold for a while, then boom, once that shuts off, it's like the blood flow explodes, and it's increased everywhere. And so I've always said, you know, if I apply cold to something, say you apply ice to your knee because your knee hurts. You apply the ice to it, it restricts the blood flow while your ice is on it. But then as soon as you let that off, now the blood all rushes to it to increase the blood flow. It's kind of like a kink in a hose.
Right, right.
You know, you kink up a hose and the pressure builds up, and then you unkink it and boom, it explodes.
Right.
It's kind of the same type of thing. You restrict that blood flow so that when you let it go, you get this explosion, you get this extra blood flow than what you would normally get. And the extra blood flow, the cells in the blood in that area help repair the area.
Right. Yeah, and that's always been the kind of the philosophy, is that the extra blood's bringing what? Oxygen. And the oxygen is what repairs things, right? So I, you know, almost it the vasoconstriction under cold weather almost seems, if you were to think of things as evolution, anti-evolution, meaning you think the body would be ready to adapt and send more blood flow.
Well, I don't really believe in evolution.
So. Well, I don't either, but that's why I'm alluding to the, you know, if you believe in evolution, why wouldn't the body have adapted to do that? Or you can just say, why didn't God design it to where if we get really cold, you're going to get, your body's going to start releasing, because the body's amazing, right? So there's obviously an effect to it. So the second theory postulates that, again, this is not like rock solid science, that the reduced perception of pain, which this is true, is due to the analgesic effect of cold water, whereby immersion into cold water leads to decreased nerve conduction and speeds the excitability, thus reducing communication with the sympathetic nervous system.
So that's a really fancy way to say that it goes numb.
Yes. Yes. So, and that is 100%. You know, a lot of times you'll go into the doctor if you have like some type of muscle pain, tendon pain, ligament pain, or you have some surgery on your leg, they'll put a ice cast on you, and then they run ice water through that ice cast to numb the area. My mom had that done. And so that is true.
Yeah, see, I don't like that, though. I don't like the idea of applying cold to something to get rid of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
That...
This is why they say the rice method doesn't work.
Well, and I'm not saying it doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
but the methodology to me is flawed. You're going to apply cold to, if it's specifically with the purpose of reducing the pain, then you're not really fixing the problem.
No.
You're just trying to mask the problem.
100%.
It's no different than, you know, taking an ibuprofen or something.
Yeah.
It just tries to get it to where you don't feel the pain. It doesn't actually improve the pain.
Right.
By any means. The pain is your body sending a signal to your brain saying, hey, something ain't right here. You maybe want to look into this because it ain't right. And if you just say, okay, something ain't right, so let me just mask the problem and forget about it and so that it doesn't hurt. I'm not fixing anything. That's
right.
Not why it hurts. It doesn't hurt so that you can just mask the pain. It hurts so that you can fix the pain.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, that's, again, that's why I mentioned the rice method up front, where a lot of people, oh, you know, to heal that up, you need to do the, you know, ice water, right? You know, but all that's, and then people, oh, it really works because my pain goes away. Well, it's not healing it, because it's, one, it's taking the blood away, okay, which is necessary for healing, and it's numbing the pain, but that's just covering it up. It's not, you know, it's not fostering healing. Okay, so then we get to the placebo effect. It says theory suggests that the effectiveness of cold water immersion on the reduction of post-exercise pain and fatigue is primarily down to psychological perception.
Never underestimate the power of placebo.
100%. That's what I agree with.
They've done a ton of studies that placebo is a lot of times the most effective in anything for pain relief and things like that.
Yeah.
So if you tell people that it's going to work and they do it, they'll think it worked.
You ever watch the show MASH?
Mm-mm, no.
There's a classic episode.
How
where,
old am I?
Oh, shut it.
How old are you?
Hey, they play reruns. You can watch it today. But there's an episode where they talk about, or when they run out of morphine, and they got an entire hospital full of injured soldiers, and they're like, what are we going to do? We got to be able to manage their pain, right? And so they're all in pain, and so they call this meeting, right? And they all said, we're going to make up sugar pills and call them very, very strong medication, and we have to sell it. Like, we really have to make them believe that we believe that these sugar pills are, you can't take too many of them because it can, you know, be, can be too much, right? So, and the, some of the doctors were like, I don't know if this is going to work. We're talking about real pain here, you know? And he says, if you believe it, they'll believe it. So they do the episode where they, you know, they're giving these people, these men, these placebos, and some of them like, oh, I'm feeling, oh, thank you so much for giving me that, you know, the power of the mind. And it alluded to that. Something that I grew up, my dad telling me, the power of the mind, you don't realize your mind can actually heal you, you know? And, but the, it was a great episode because that it really connected the dots of, if you can sell it and truly get them to believe how powerful this is, then they can, they will believe it and they actually start feeling better.
Well, whatever works, if it actually works and it actually helps you and it's because of placebo.
I thought it was interesting. They actually used the placebo effect in this discussion about cold plunge.
You know, a lot of people say that with supplements too, is that supplements are almost all placebo.
Oh, very good.
That, yeah. You know, you take this and, well, this is supposed to make you stronger, you know, and so you take it and you think, well, this, I took a supplement, so now I'm going to be stronger. And so then you're, you know, your mind's there and you're lifting and you, so you try something heavier than you ever do and you get it and you're like, man, that did make me stronger.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, really, it didn't. It just was the placebo effect.
So what's it called when it goes the opposite direction? Like when you don't get your supplement and you don't fit, and you, so you think, oh, I'm not going to be as strong. What would that be called?
I don't know what that would be called. It's kind of like the same, it's kind of like the anti-placebo. I don't know.
It's like, you know, because I know there's times that in my mind I have to catch myself where if I am, let's say I've been, last week I hit it really good, right? I put in the days, I felt good about the amount of a volume I put in. And then like this week, the stuff just happened. I had to go home one day with a migraine, so I didn't get my workout in. Another day, the gym just got busy, did lots of membership administration work. And then, you know, the week just didn't offer me. I think I got like 3 days in this week, okay? So I remember kind of just thinking, man, I'm getting weaker. Well, I'm not, you know, I can still, you know, grab the weight I want and do it. But you start thinking, am I going to be able to do those next week? You know, and, you know, so there's the opposite of that where you can convince yourself if you're not taking the supplements or you're not, if you missed a few days of work, oh, I'm getting weaker, you know. So you have to watch that as well.
Yeah, I would agree. So is that the... basically everything that the article alluded to is the possible.
The only other thing it kind of talked about was hydrostatic pressure. He said, again, it's interesting. It says the theory lies with the effect of hydrostatic pressure on the body during immersion into water. When an individual is immersed in water, they are subject to effects of hydrostatic pressure. For every one meter of immersion, the pressure gradient rises by 74 milliliters of mercury. This is almost equal to the typical diastolic blood pressure. As the pressure gradient increases with depth, the deeper you go, the more pressure is imposed, and the hydrostatic pressure causes an inward-upward squeezing action on the body and is the mechanism that causes the effects of buoyancy. The buoyancy reduces the gravitational load on the body, meaning the subject, meaning the objects such as a human body weighs less in the water, demonstrates the reduction of body weight at various water immersion depths.
Well, that that doesn't really have anything to do with the temperature of the water.
No.
It's just saying that being in water is more comfortable for your body because you don't have the same gravitational load that you do when you're standing up. There's not the same pressure. like when you're floating in the water, you're almost kind of weightless.
Well, it goes on to say that the water temperature of 34 to 35 degrees is known as the thermoneutral zone.
Yeah, but that's Celsius.
Oh, it is Celsius. Yeah.
So that's like 95 degree water.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Which is because the human body is 98.6 degrees. And so water that's close to that temperature is going to be the most normal for the body.
Correct.
But yeah, and there's a lot of benefits, or a lot of perceived benefits with swimming for rejuvenation and kind of physical therapy because of that. There's less pressure on the body.
Right.
Going through that, people rehab knees and stuff in the water because you can move the leg in a much easier way than you can whenever you're standing on the ground.
Right.
So I would agree with that, but that's not necessarily a benefit of specifically cold plunging. It's more of a just a benefit of swimming in general.
Right, right. Well, and then it kind of goes down on later and just talks about some, what are some of the issues with cold water, one alluding to what we talked about earlier, the material that you need, right? You know, the amount of ice you need.
It's difficult.
Right. You know, and the thing about infrared, you know, you buy a box and that's an infrared box and...
it's electrical.
Yeah, done. So yeah, I think we've, you know... Now, again, I want to... Me and Parker are personal trainers. So, you know, we're covering these things of the knowledge that we have about them. We, you know, at some point we might have on someone who has great expertise on this, and we'll go into more depth on cold water plunging, because I'm not someone will tell you that yes, do cold water plunging, or no, don't do cold water plunging. I see what I would consider, is it really worth my time? You know, or there's some things that, you know, I would say, yeah, there's some things that might be, but you know, I'm not going to go out of my way to do it unless someone can convince me there's a reason to do it.
Yeah, that's been my philosophy pretty much all along. It's a little too much effort. It's a little too cumbersome to try to do an ice bath on a frequent basis.
Right.
So I don't. However, I do cold showers because it's much easier. You just turn the knob to cold.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's not the same effect. It's not the same as an ice bath, but it's very close, especially in the wintertime. The water's a lot colder when the ground's a lot colder.
Right.
So it's more similar, but I would also say that I've never really looked at cold showers from the standpoint of a healing benefit or a muscular benefit, anything like that.
Right.
More of a mental aspect for me.
Yeah. And then so there's the question, is cold water immersion good for the mental side? I'm not sure.
I say absolutely yes.
Yeah. I had a previous gym that I worked for that absolutely did not believe in it, you know, and I can't remember all the reasons at the time, but he was a strong advocate for you not to do that. But so there's definitely people on both sides of the fence here.
Yeah, and I can't really see any major negatives.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to believe in the benefits, then that's fine. But I'm not sure how you could be strongly against it, because I'm not really sure what the negatives would even be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's... Do we think it promotes healing?
Healing in what way?
Let's say you got sore muscles, or you need to, it doesn't say anything about releasing lactic acid, so I don't think it'll do that, but sore muscles, sore tendons, sore ligaments.
Is it a piece of the puzzle? I think it is a small piece of the puzzle. Is it crucial? No.
Yeah.
Is it important? Not really.
Yeah. That would be my take. And, you know, because like I said, I recently injured my bicep. I didn't do any icing at all. I did stem technology, healed it up in 2 weeks.
That's next level, though.
That's next level. That's like big time.
Your neuro suit sitting in there in the office. Matt's digging out the neuro suit.
Yeah, I think we have a client for that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
So I'm going to be hopefully starting him next week.
Interesting.
So I might have to bring Steve on and talk about that some more.
Yeah, because it's been almost a year now since he's been on.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the neuro suit. interesting technology. Okay, so anything else you want to add on the cold plunge before we move on, Matt?
No, I think we've covered that.
Okay, so infrared saunas next. So one extreme, the cold plunge, extremely cold ice water. The other extreme is the sauna, extremely hot temperatures, much hotter than you could get even in a blazing sunny summer day.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So a lot of people, I would say that the popularity of the sauna has followed suit with the popularity of the cold plunge over the last few years. Mm-hmm. It has become a really popular thing. And it's almost even a little more popular. And I think that the reason that it's more popular is because it's a little more pleasant.
100%.
You can sit in a sauna and be, it's warm, but you're still somewhat comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like a cold plunge, like you're in there, you're not comfortable because it's freezing water.
Yeah. I've fallen asleep in 150 degree heat. I can't fall asleep in, 32 degree water.
No, not at all. But a lot of the perceived benefits are similar or even the same as the cold plunging. So, Matt, have you had much experience with infrared saunas before?
Just from my last job, right? So, yeah. I worked there close to 2 years. Probably 2 years. And I used it a lot, and loved it. I always felt kind of refreshed when I came out of there. If I put in a really hard workout, I'd sit in there. There's times I've was going to plan on being in there like 20 or 30 minutes, and I ended up falling asleep and being in there for an hour. But I always, when I was in there, I came out of there feeling like, oh, that felt good. Muscles feel better, got a little bit of another, just a tiny boost coming out of there. At least that was my experience. I thought it was very soothing. And, if I had sore muscles, it just helped.
Yeah, I agree. I've definitely used a sauna before, not super frequently ever. I like it the most in the wintertime, when I don't have exposure to really hot temperatures. I mean, in the summertime, you go work outside when it's 100 degrees, you sweat a lot. But in the wintertime, if you're outside, you don't really sweat much because it's cold.
Right.
And even if you're inside, you're inside where the heat's on, it's never hot enough to make you sweat a bunch.
Right.
So I've always liked the infrared sauna from the standpoint of I can get a lot of sweat. Which I've always thought sweat is very good for the body in terms of a detoxification. And that's one of the big benefits of saunas that is listed is detoxification.
Right.
And the concept is that it's similar. Sweating is similar to urination, where when you urinate, it's a lot of the things your body has filtered out that it doesn't need, things that shouldn't necessarily be in there. And sweating is kind of similar, where a lot of times you will sweat out certain things that your body doesn't necessarily need inside of it.
Right.
So the more you sweat, now of course, sweating will also dehydrate you. So the more you sweat, the more you need to rehydrate. But the more you sweat, the more you're flushing out things you've put in your body that maybe shouldn't be there, or things that have ended up in your body unknown to you, toxins and different things. And of course, a infrared sauna is going to make you sweat. So if you believe that sweating reduces those toxins, then I think infrared sauna is a great way to get that sweat, especially in the wintertime.
Yeah. I found this interesting. It says there's, the infrared saunas focus on penetrating warmth directly on your skin to bring heat therapy benefits. Traditional methods crank up the temperature within the entire sauna. These two approaches bring vastly different readings on thermostat temperatures, and infrared saunas typically land between 110 to 135 degrees. Well, ours would get about 145, sometimes 150 if you let it go long enough.
Yeah, I've seen ones get up to 150 before.
Yeah.
But not a whole lot hotter than that, just because it's a dry heat.
Yeah.
You don't want to go super high.
Yeah. It's a traditional saunas usually fall between 150 and 195, and I'm assuming that's like steam saunas.
Yes.
Yeah. And which, until I got to an infrared sauna, I could not stand steam saunas.
Why is that?
I don't know. I just couldn't. I felt like I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, I'd go in there, I was like, oh, I can't take this, you know. And then when I went into an infrared, I'm like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's just, it was different.
I would agree with that. I've always liked the infrared better. I didn't really know that the traditional saunas get that much hotter, though.
I didn't either. Now, I have heard someone say they've come across infrared saunas that get hotter than 150, but I don't know where I heard that from.
Huh. And another thing, too, I think the technology behind infrared saunas is much cheaper.
Yeah.
I don't really know a traditional sauna, how you would go about, you know, because we just talked about the comparing it to the cold plunges where you have to have a tank and ability to make large amounts of ice and fill up a water tank every day, drain it, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with a sauna. Getting access to a sauna is a challenge.
Yeah.
You would basically have to buy a membership somewhere that had one.
Yeah.
Which you can do. There are places around, but we were talking to a couple of our trainees a couple days ago about it, and they were going to one, was a membership place, and I can't remember exactly how much it was, but it felt kind of expensive. It was like $20 per time that you went or something.
Oh, wow.
I want to say.
That's pricey.
And I thought, that's really expensive. You wouldn't take too long, and you could almost pay for your own, because the little, like, two-person, you can find the infrared saunas that fit two, three people for $2,000. You know, $2,000 used, yeah. Maybe $3,000 brand new.
Yeah.
And so that's a pretty big chunk, but then you've got it, and you just hit a button, turn it on. It takes a while to heat up, but once it's heated up, then it's you know, it's ready, and then you just turn it off when you're done.
Yeah, that's something I want to get in 2025 is an infrared sauna. Because if you remember how the one we had at, 100 put together, it was, it came down in sections,
mm-hmm.
right? So I remember taking that apart and putting that back together when we moved it. And so I was like, this is really adaptable. You know, you can move it around with some, you know, with a little bit of effort. And so that seems like a very usable and mobile, you know, with some effort. I mean, it's not like you can just pick the box up and move it, but it does come apart in like Legos.
Do you have room for one?
Yeah. Yeah, I got one. I got room for one. Now, I can't remember. I think our basement ceilings are 10 feet. I think that would fit.
Yeah.
You know.
So we're going to have to start making some room in the budget for a sauna, yeah. Sounds like. 2025.
I enjoyed it a lot. But, you know, we're also talking about Anytime Fitness. You know, when we hit some certain milestone memberships here, that might be something we look at for, you know, as an additional perk for our members.
That would be cool. Yeah. Okay, so let's dive in a little bit to this article where it talks about the specific things that are health benefits of infrared saunas. The first one that it lists is improved heart health. So what it essentially says is your blood vessels widen and increase blood flow under the heat, and your heart rate ticks up, which is kind of not the heart rate part, but the blood vessel part is the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Of the cold plunge, right? Your blood vessels expand, increases the blood flow right away. Your heart rate ticks up, which is true. Under high heat and high sweat, it's stress on your body. Your heart rate's going to tick up. And that stress and exposure to your body is going to get it in essentially better shape, like we talked about with temperature shape, and improve your heart's ability to function.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, it says it mimics exercise, which is kind of true. You're hot, you're sweaty, your heart rate's up.
Your blood vessels open up.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it does. But you're not, you're not going putting your muscles through exertion. But, you know, I don't know. For me, it was just ironically, the next thing is soothing sore muscles. which I was about to say is like, for me, that's what it was about. It was just soothing.
Interesting. I never really thought about it for that. Soothing sore muscles, huh?
I don't know. I went in and I just like, oh, it just, I felt like if I had any like aches and pains, I'd walk out of there and they were mitigated. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess you would say you experienced that. What it says here is basically the improved blood circulation brought on by an infrared sauna can help speed muscle recovery.
Yeah.
And the concept is very similar to what we talked about with the ice, where after you remove the ice, then the blood flow accelerates. On this one, it's just the heat in general causes an accelerated blood flow, and that would speed it up. More blood flow. So my recommendation to my trainees, especially when they first begin, your first few sessions, if you haven't done a lot of working out, especially if you're working out with a trainer, you're going to be very sore. And they always ask me, what do I do for the soreness? I always tell them, because most people don't have access to an infrared sauna or a cold plunge or something. I told them movement is the most important thing. Keep moving. You know, if you do a leg workout and then you go sit on a desk or sit in a car for 12 hours, you're going to get out and you're going to be really sore.
Yeah, no blood flow.
Those muscles, no blood flow. I said, but if you, you know, go on a couple of walks, you know, walk for 20 minutes a couple times over the next day or two, that will help tremendously because that walking, that blood flow, accelerated blood flow, accelerated healing to the muscles, accelerated just the process of the recovery process is accelerated. And that's going to be the best thing for your soreness. So it stands to reason that the accelerated blood flow of the heat of an infrared sauna would produce a similar effect.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you were saying, hey, there's similar effects between the cold plunge and the sauna, well, the sauna numbs the pain, right?
Or the cold plunge numbs.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yes, you're correct. The cold plunge numbs the pain and the sauna soothes the pain, more blood flow to help. Now you might think, well, there's times when I've injured my muscle and it feels like I want to stop the blood flow to that sore muscle because it feels like it's pulsing, like it hurts. It's just like, oh, it hurts so bad, but it doesn't seem to like you open it up and it's not pulsing anymore. It's allowing for that free blood flow, that free delivery of oxygen so that it's, you know, it's just, you come out of there and that heat just soothes me. So it has it's a really effective tool if you get access to a sauna. And I would, you know, if, I don't know if we're going to compare them, but if it were my dithers, I would highly, highly recommend infrared over cold plunge.
Have you ever seen the things before people will use for blood flow restriction while they're working out?
You mean like compression?
Not really. More like kind of compression, like a strap.
Uh-huh,
sometimes people have them, they might wear around their arm.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
But their upper arm, and it'll wrap around and it'll get real tight, you know, and then they'll do like a bicep workout.
Yeah.
I've seen that before, and I don't really know any of the science behind that, but it does make you pumped up a lot more. You know, you do a workout like that with that blood flow restriction, and then your arms look a lot bigger.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because it actually increases the blood flow.
Is there any
like area.
Permanent effect with this, or
no? I mean, it,
yeah.
Like,
so
it's
what's
not
the
like
purpose?
It's not like the bite. It's not like your muscles are growing more.
Yeah,
it's just
no.
Increased blood flow makes the muscle appear bigger.
So what's the purpose?
Just fun.
Okay. I mean, I'd want there to be some, you know, advantage or health advantage.
No fun, Matt. Ooh. Don't even like to do something for fun.
You know, if I was single and the girls were coming in, I'd do it. But
I've never, I haven't done it in a long time, but there was a couple different times to do that when I was younger.
Yeah.
Okay. So
you weren't
next...
married yet, though.
No. Uh-uh. I haven't done it in the last couple of years. What do you say? The only reason to have big arms is for girls?
Pretty much.
So the next benefit of infrared sauna, relaxation.
Mm.
This one, personally, I can attest to. That's the main reason. Well, I'd say the second reason. The sweating, getting the toxins out is a big reason. The second reason for me is relaxation. It's very relaxing to get into that heat. It's very soothing and relaxing, especially in the wintertime when it's cold outside. It's cold most places you go. you can get in there and just be in your t-shirt and be very warm.
Well, it's funny. I told you I'd fallen asleep in there, right?
Yes.
So usually the time I was hitting the sauna, Ryan, our ex-boss, he was wanting to hit the sauna too, right? So about the time he'd be like, okay, you know, let me know when you're getting out. Don't turn it off. Just, you know, reset it. And I'm like, okay. A couple times I fell asleep. So I'm in there like an hour and Ryan keeps coming back and checking. And he's like, I'm sure he was not happy with me, you know? And, I think one time I came out and I said, dude, I'm so sorry. I needed to be somewhere too. So, you know, but he was always there the same time I was. And because I found him like sound asleep in there for, you know, been in there 30, 45 minutes out.
Yeah.
Oh, and it says one of the next ones is catching Z's.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah.
Matt, you familiar with that? I don't think I've ever fell asleep in a sauna.
I have many times.
But I might have to do that. And it says better sleep. I'd be interested to read into that a little bit more, why you would get better sleep in a sauna versus in just room temperature. I would have to look into that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, when I was in there, you know, you turn on the sauna, you know, 30 to 45 minutes before you go into it, so it'd get up to temperature, and you might walk into it when the sauna is at like 115 degrees, right? Very comfortable. And then you fall asleep and you wake up, it's 145, 147 degrees. You know, and it was still very, you know, comfortable, you know, but because you've kind of like the frog in the pot syndrome, you're slowly going up with that temperature and you're adjusted to it. So I don't know. Yeah, I would say when I was in the sauna, I would fall asleep pretty easy. You know, I don't know.
Interesting, because I've always heard lots of research that suggests the best temperature to sleep in is like in the 60s.
Mm.
So it's very interesting to me how you would suggest better sleep when you're in 150 degrees as opposed to 65.
Could be because it's a dry heat.
Might be.
No, you know, because you know what it's like to be in a sauna with moisture.
Yeah.
That's like stinging heat.
Yeah, I don't like that
anymore. And, you know, and I can tell you the difference. Like, we went to Arizona in August. It was 110 degrees, and it felt like 110 degrees there is like 95 here with moisture. So
like a 15 degree difference.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different type of heat.
So another reason that I think it's really good to use infrared sauna, another reason that I have used infrared sauna, fighting off illnesses.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, anytime you start to feel a little sick, you're just not feeling quite right. It's a good place to go. I've always thought that. I didn't really know why it worked, but let's read what it says here. They say saunas reduce oxidative stress, which is associated with cardiovascular disease, cancer, and diseases like dementia.
That's crazy.
And it'll help you avoid the common cold. Doesn't give a lot of detail behind that. But I do notice that if I get a really good sauna session in when I'm starting to feel a little bit of a cold coming on, either the cold is greatly reduced or sometimes can go away versus if I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever used it when you were sick or had a sickness coming on?
Well, I think both of us, like, I can count on one hand the number of times I've had the flu or had a virus in the last 4 years. I get sick very rarely. So I've never been in it when I'm sick. So, and, you know, and that's something to be mindful of, is that clean eating and exercise will keep you healthy. You know, you won't get sick as easily.
100%.
So I've never been in when I'm sick, but I'm sure, I mean, that's true. You know, it's going on to say, you know, where you're talking about detoxification, you know, we sweat out toxins, you know, cadmium or lead, you know, but, again, I think, you know, both the sciences on both of these extreme temperature environments is still ongoing.
100%.
And so,
like we always tell people, research isn't the end all be all.
No, it's not.
And it's cool to look at these things and to talk about them, test them out, you mm-hmm. know, test the theories, but see what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
If it works for you, then great, use it. If you don't like it, don't use it.
Right, right, 100%.
Oh, Matt, down here it says, maximum time, even if you're an experienced sauna user, keep sessions below 30 minutes.
Oh, man, I've busted that many times.
I always go over 30 minutes,
too.
I don't think that there's any type of hard stop there. And also it says to limit use to 3 visits a week. Interesting.
Oh, I hit that thing almost every day.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I would say if you are doing a cold plunge or a sauna, I would almost recommend an everyday thing just as kind of that routine for your body than mm-hmm. I would to just do it sporadically, because I'm not sure you're going to get the full benefit if you do it sporadically.
I jumped ahead a little bit here. It said risk of infrared saunas. The two that caught my eye were the bottom two, which would be more common to everyday people. If you're trying to conceive, heat is not good for sperm health.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. And then secondly, it says if you're sick, wait until you feel better for your sweat session.
What?
Yeah.
It just said earlier.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's a contradiction in the same article.
Which is why we don't treat these studies and articles as gospel.
Yeah. You know, stay hydrated and rinse off afterward. So
we learned some very valuable stuff today.
Yeah.
And I think the most valuable thing that I learned was that starting next year, I can stop by the Wasco household and use the sauna whenever I'd like to.
For a cool $100.
Yeah, that thing paid for pretty quick.
Yeah, I know.
I'm gonna make
some cool dimes off of that thing. So, well, guys, this is episode 44.
44. That's a good number.
Yeah, I'd say we would call our episode with what's the doctor that's coming on, Dr.
Alexander.
Alexander. Dr. Alexander, who's coming on January 4th, we can call that our 1 year.
That'll be about right for 1 year. Do you have the date of the first episode? Do you know when that was?
I think it was December. I can tell you. Hold on. It's on our Spotify.
It was right at kind of the end of the year.
Oh, it was December 23rd. So 23rd. Really, that's coming up.
Wow. That's almost exactly a year next week. So
yeah,
getting close to celebrating a year of the Loading the Bar podcast. If you've been with us all the way through, huge thank you for the support. If you joined us somewhere along the way or you're just joining us, we're really glad that you're here with us. Tell your friends, tell your family, spread the word. You know, even if you don't, even if they're not going to sit down and listen, take some of these things that you hear and tell them. Spread the word, because, you know, we got to get the word out. We need to spread it. For people that don't have, because everyone has access to this information if they know where to look.
Right.
But a lot of people don't readily get exposed to this information. And so I believe, as people who take our health and fitness very seriously, we have the responsibility to spread this knowledge to our loved ones, our friends and family.
100%.
So that they can know. If they still don't choose to follow, if they still don't choose to implement some of these things, that's understandable, and it's up to them. But I think it is our duty to spread the word, spread the knowledge, and help inform them on some of these things, going back to the seed oils, the importance of exercise, even something like saunas and cold plunges.
Yeah,
this topic came as a recommendation from a family member of mine, my older sister. I want to give a shout out to her for the topic.
Well, and as we go forward, guys, we're, you know, we just completed 1 year. These podcasts, they're work, right? We're having to fit them into our lives, and so we're going to try and improve our timing and our exposure over the next year. I would say 1 year is still infancy, and so to be patient with us as we continue to work hard and bring these topics and bring these guests to you. That's our goal for 2025. We want to start growing this. Now we've got like 40 some episodes under our belt. It's kind of nice to have going forward.
Yep. Exciting stuff, guys. Thanks for joining us. Hope you learned some good stuff today. And we will be back with you guys next week with another episode.
Take care, guys.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.